Hey, this is Seth Wars from Channel 9 coming to you from Building 25, where the .NET team lives. We're not supposed to feed them or hit the windows when they're working, but I got in somehow, and I'm here to talk with Emil Landworth. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you?
Fantastic. So .NET has kind of been an interesting transition, right? There's been like this weird teenage pimply years, right? I mean, tell me why that is. What's going on?
Yeah, so like we announced 2 years ago that we go with .NET Core cross-platform, mm-hmm. right? So now we have, recently, I think 2 months ago or whatever, we acquired Xamarin. Mm-hmm. So now we have interesting offerings across pretty much any device you can imagine, right? From data center and Azure, like to mobile devices, to iOS and Android, like .NET can get you anywhere. And so the challenge for us is to make sure that if you take your code, that you can meaningfully get everywhere.
So when we say .NET, I feel like we need to draw what that means today, because .NET isn't just, like when I wrote .NET 1.0, that was it. But now
yes.
It feels like there's a lot more things to look at.
Yeah, so when we started, like if you want to draw the original picture that we had, it looked like this, right? We had the .NET framework.
But in much better handwriting, apparently.
In much better handwriting. Yeah, my handwriting is, can you see this on camera? I think it's readable, right?
Yeah.
So basically what we have is let me just draw this. Basically we had...
Don't go too high, bro.
Yeah, I tried to. Let me actually do this differently. WinForms, right? And then we had...
ASP.NET.
ASP.NET.
And that was it, right, to start?
Right. So that was basically, you want to write your traditional Windows apps with dialogues and buttons. And then we had ASP.NET. Specifically, we had forms here, so they even went too far to say, the kind of way you write the apps, you just drag and drop buttons, and the app application model looks very similar. So the idea was, .NET Framework can do whatever your business needs to do.
Right.
And you have a very productive environment to do that. You have, you know, the same language, like on the bottom here you have, you know, C Sharp essentially is your language. We have VB.NET. And back then we also had like a bunch of other languages, which I already forgot. And so the idea was, this was the package that whatever your business needs to get done, whether it's a website, a web server, whether it's a Windows servers, this thing can get you anywhere.
It was everywhere. Like one framework to rule them all.
One framework to rule them
and
all.
And in the darkness, bind them.
Yes.
too many Lord of the Rings?
No, I love Lord of the Rings. Okay. But to the mind, the high order bit back then was, right, Windows, right?
Yeah.
So as long as you want to target Windows, that's the best possible story you can have. And then over the years, we realized that even Windows itself had multiple devices, right? I mean, pretty much at the same time we shipped .NET Framework, we also shipped Compact Framework, which was the early 2000 phones, which had like, I want to say 8K of memory or something, mm-hmm. like very, very low memory. And so we said, well, the .NET Framework, as we designed it back then, was designed for PCs. And PCs, you know, at the end of 90s, early 2000s, was still, you know, have an exponential growth in terms of RAM and CPU. So the idea was, we don't have to optimize this at all for deployment, we don't have to optimize this at all for speed, because your box gets faster and you can write the code anyway, so who cares? But then we said, oh shit, if we want to get on the phone, what do we do? And then we introduced the .NET Compact Framework.
And that's when, because I remember I had my Compact PDA with the little pen, and then I would do stuff, and it was super cool. I was like, I want to write an app for that.
Right. And that would basically give you, like, we had a similar app model here for WinForms. Like, I don't know what they called it, but it basically was WinForms for the phone. Mm-hmm. So you would drag and drop the buttons, you write the code in the click handler. So it was very similar, but it was a different framework. And it would literally differ everywhere. Like, string would be cut down, you know, collections would be cut down. Everything was basically designed to fit on the small chip that the phones had.
And even the APIs were somewhat different, right?
Oh yeah, file not found exception is a great example. Like, you would think that we expose the file name, right? But we don't, because it was just not in the footprint of the device. And back in the day, the code sharing story was, there is no code sharing story. Like, you write dedicated apps, so why would you ever share code? And then over the years, you know, more of these things happen, right? I mean, like, I don't even have enough room, but I mean, there's, you know, we added...
The Mono framework came out?
Mono came out a couple years after we shipped, and they basically did an open source re-implementation, but they basically did an open source re-implementation of .NET Framework, so like the big fat thing you put on Linux. And then at the same time, like a few years later, we would ship, similar to Compact Framework, Silverlight, which was designed to run in the web browser, which was, again, another flavor of .NET. And then later on, we shipped a new version of the phone, which took a bet on Silverlight, and so it looked similar to Silverlight, but still different enough to cause pain.
And then we had Windows 8.
Then we had Windows 8, where we optimized for the touch-enabled, you know, PCs, laptops, you know, tablets in between. And so the code sharing story got really complicated. And pretty much, I think, I want to say 4 or 5 years ago, we had this platform that looked like this, right? We had vertical one, which it was, you know, the .NET framework. Then we had, you know, Silverlight, and then we had Phone, and there's a bunch more that I can't fit on. And like the sizes are, you know, not to scale, right? They're probably more like this, right? So. Right, you have Phone here.
And when you say size, you mean in terms of APIs?
In terms of APIs, this space, functionality, right? And so like on the phone, certain things just don't make sense. So there's no sense, it doesn't make sense to have Windows services on the phone or ASP.NET on the phone, right? So that was cut out. But basically, now you want to share code. Well, again, it was back to the, write the thing multiple times or copy the sources around. And we added a thing called Portable Class Libraries, which essentially what it did, it tried to basically give you a way to write code that can span what I call, you know, if you think of these things as verticals, like business, basically in the terms of this is what your business needs, right? The scenario you want to accomplish, right? I want to write a website or a phone app. And then the horizontal is essentially the cross-cutting thing where you want to share the business.
So this is like healthcare, this is like banking, and every one of those have similar things that need to happen, and you want to find that cross-section.
Correct. And so like if you want to now share across these things, it gets challenging. And like a portable class libraries gave you a tooling story that allows you to express where do I want the result to run. So you would click all the, you know, the platforms and the version numbers you want to target. And then we would basically go back, compute essentially an API set and say, great, we know you want to run on phone and Silverlight, so we can give you the UI stack, right? And we can give you some other things like networking. Or you want to target these two things, well, then certain things disappear because they're not available on full framework. And so the idea was, you can think of this as this giant Venn diagram, right, where every single circle is a platform. And then Portable Class Libraries is all the different intersections that you have. And then so we had all these profile numbers.
And the profile numbers, it was what that intersection set was.
Yes.
So it feels like we were at the mercy of whatever was being implemented.
That's exactly right. So that, and all these platforms were owned by different teams. Done by different divisions, by different people. So they evolved independently. Sometimes the difference is just, oh, we added an API here that is not added here yet. Sometimes both people did the same feature in different flavors, and then it's incompatible fundamentally. And Portable basically was done by one team that tried to bring this whole thing together somehow. But we were limited by the platforms that were available at the time. It wasn't designed to be reusable. It was just an accident.
Well, not only that, but I remember there was a couple of projects where I clicked on all of them, and they're like, sorry, you can't do that.
Right.
Because there was no logical intersection.
Correct.
And so how do we fix this? I mean, it feels like there was a solution that you all came up with.
Yeah, so the solution that everybody wants, right? Like if you look at how would you from the get-go design anything, right? Like everybody does these layer diagrams, right? And it looks usually like this, right?
So if there's no layer diagram, we cannot have technical confidence. So here is the layer diagram.
Here's the one layer diagram.
The one layer diagram.
And like usually it looks like this, right? If you look at any layer diagram, it's like you have core, and then you have like your, you know, maybe not that one because it's probably less readable. And then you have your building blocks that sit on top of that, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you look at a normal business app, this is where your business logic would live.
Right.
And you would say, this is my
Windows.
My desktop, let's say, right? And then this is your web. Phone, and then this may be your web backend, right? And so you would put the function that is specific to web here, function that's specific to phone here, and so on and so forth, right? And clearly there's more layers you can have. And in terms of .NET, you can translate this essentially to say, maybe we should have this a shared base that every single .NET platform has. And not just in spirit, but actually in a compatible
API.
In terms of compatible APIs. And we call this thing in the good old way, we call it the one standard to rule them all, right? So .NET standard. And the idea is that this thing is essentially a representation of all the APIs that you can share at the base layer across all app models. So this is something that you would intuitively think of. Clearly, there is the key primitives like string and int that would be here, right? Collections would be in here. Networking would be in here. XML would be in here. What wouldn't be in here is things that are specific to an app model. So like UI, for example, wouldn't be here because it doesn't make sense, right? You have different UI stacks on different platforms. Operating system specific APIs are generally not here either, right? If this thing is going cross-plat, so this may be an iOS device, this may be a Windows machine, and this might be a Linux box. So if we would say, the Windows registry is available here. Well, how would that work when you run your web server on Linux?
Right.
There's no registry. Or what would happen when you run it on an iOS device? And so these are the kind of things we want to share. And not only do we want to share them today, which was basically what PCLs did, we can express what we can share today, but we also want to express what we want to share for eternity. So the idea is this is the thing that everybody has to implement. So the idea is if a new platform shows up on the side.
Platform foo, because that's what we always call stuff as programs.
Exactly. So like the I don't know, like
Baz, B-A-Z.
Some I mean, those funky
are the, I can't come up with
like,
something
yeah,
else.
Something awesome, right?
Foo, there you go.
And now the whole business is saying, oh, foos are really important and we need to support foos with .NET. And so in the PCL world, well, clearly there could be another random intersection. And
sure.
They may decide to like cut half the PCL because they don't like the way we have done asynchronous APIs. And they decide, oh, we don't want to have the old crappy APIs in there. This thing says, no. Here's a set of APIs that you will have, whether you want them or not. And the reason being is that this is the API set that library authors will use. So when you go to NuGet.org and you go to find your random package that does something that you really like, I don't know, like counting bits or whatever it is, then fundamentally, like your library today is targeting usually specific versions of .NET.
Right.
So let's say you have your desktop app, you find this awesome library that counts bits or whatever it does, works fine here. Then later on, your boss says, oh, I want a phone app, and you build your phone app. Go download the package for them, that you already know and love,
yeah.
And then you find out, oh, the package doesn't work on phone. And the reason it doesn't work for phone is because the package was designed for this one and this one only. With .NET Standard, because we basically tell people, these are the APIs you will have everywhere. The idea is that most libraries will be able to basically just use APIs that are within that standard, which means it doesn't matter. This will work on every current platform and on all the future platforms as well. So when foo really takes off and everybody talks about foos and builds apps for foos, then all the .NET libraries that are on NuGet right now will just basically work on foo because they're the same.
And it felt like then, you tell me if this is a good way of thinking, it felt like the profile system of before was an implicit sort of intersection that happened by force, and this is more of an explicit definition of what it should be,
right.
And everyone else, if they want to be part of the .NET standard and they want things to be able, they have to adhere to that.
Yes, this is the, in .NET we called this thing that is at the very bottom layer that is like strings, ints, collection, networking,
sure.
We call this the BCL, right, the base class library. And the idea is that this is the base everybody can build on top of. So think of this as being, the C runtime library or the POSIX in the Linux world. Right? This is a standard that everybody adheres to, but it's also a specification with a concrete set of APIs that you can rely on being everywhere. And so not only is this a document that exists somewhere, this is actually, in our world, a toolable artifact. So we actually will have a way that you can say, file a new .NET standard-based class library, and you will be compiling against this guy here. And what that means is this guy clearly has versions, right? I mean, at some point we say, oh, we have a 1.0, which we already shipped, by the way. So we have 1.0 through 1.6 that is already out there.
And 2 is being defined right now.
2 is the one that we're working on right now. And 2 will be much bigger than the 1.x thing. So this will actually have much, much, much more API surface. And also it will be more similar to how desktop looks like today. Like .NET Core went very different routes, and we tried to reimagine some of the base APIs, and we tried to unravel this a bit, because as it turns out, when you have an app that's 10 years old, you don't want to reimagine how threading primitives work. And so this is the whole idea of it's a standard, it's toolable, it's reliable, meaning you can compile against this thing, and you can ship NuGet packages that only need the .NET standard, and you know that it will work everywhere.
So here's the next question that people are going to have. Base class libraries, you're putting it at the foundation of every .NET thing.
Right.
How do we determine what goes in there and what doesn't?
Right. So as I said before, earlier, the intuitive model that you have is, you think of this as the thing that is your business logic will be using, right? So it's things like strings and ints, collections, networking, XML, cryptography, all the things that are not tied to a particular operating system or tied to a particular application model. So it wouldn't contain APIs that are specific for web, or APIs that are specific for building GUIs, or APIs that are specific for talking to Windows, right? I mean, if you look at .NET Framework, as I drew this picture earlier, we basically tried to provide a rapid application development platform, which means you're building your applications. Yes, we run on Windows, but you don't really care because you talk to .NET APIs that are very easy, as opposed to Win32 APIs, which have the C style, you know, struct passing, all of that. So a good chunk of the things that we put in .NET Framework were things we just wrapped Windows, right? The registry is a good example. Large chunks of networking are just basic wrappers around Windows technologies. And so those are also not things you would put in here. Like if you want to use the registry, the idea is that if you remove the app models for a second, there will be other components.
Blocks, so to speak, yeah.
Yeah, usable building blocks, like the registry. I cannot type for the life of me. Registry. We will have another good example is what we call legacy components like CAS.
What's CAS?
Code access security.
Got it, yeah, yeah.
Like things you may depend on.
Yeah.
But also third-party libraries, right? Like a good example would here be JSON.NET, which everybody loves for JSON. And the idea is that these are building blocks who are basically just compiled against the .NET standard itself, which means now, from a consumption standpoint, if you target .NET standard, you can use JSON.NET. If you target .NET standard, you can use the registry. Now the end result, in case of JSON, it will run everywhere. In case of the registry, now it ties you to Windows. So the idea is, if you only care about Windows-based platforms, you still want to use the .NET standard because it means you don't have to think about differences between, let's say, .NET Core and .NET Framework, which both run on Windows,
sure.
Or even Mono runs on Windows, right? And so you can share between the different Windows versions of .NET, but you may only care about Windows. And in that case, it's completely fine to say, yep, let me use the registry. But we really want to make this an explicit step that people have to go through, because the idea is we really want this to be the promise of this runs everywhere, right? And so we say, okay, the registry is fine, you move it up, and you have to add the reference to it, and now that ties you to Windows. This component will not work on Linux.
Of course, it doesn't live there. Yeah.
But the idea is that now, because we have the APIs, you can totally write code that says at runtime, do I run on Windows? Then I can call the registry APIs. If I don't run on Windows, maybe I do some other way to store settings, for example. And so like you can use the APIs, but at runtime, if you try to call them on Linux, they would just throw an exception and say platform not supported. And that's true for many other APIs we have. And so at the beginning right now with 2.0, what we are trying to optimize for is we take .NET Framework and we take Xamarin and we do the intersection, because we think Xamarin is a really good proxy for cross-platform APIs,
sure.
And APIs that are everybody expects to be there. And we basically say these are good APIs to actually have from the standard. And that's a pretty sizable thing. So it will, for example, as I said, include like a good chunk of what people think of the BCL today. And then moving forward, we may add more things to it. Maybe we will also have more things up here, like JSON.NET. Good example here would be immutable collections, right? Which is another component mm-hmm. that sits on top. Most of them will work everywhere. And then, of course, we still want to allow people to write code that is specific to operating systems, because we don't believe that we give you the write once on everywhere model. We still want to be able to give you APIs that are usable, but they may only be OS-specific concepts. And we are starting from Windows, so the majority of them will be Windows-specific. But I would expect that long-term we also have Linux-specific APIs or OSX-specific APIs.
That go into .NET standard.
That go up here. And
that
are just in the system namespace,
right?
Makes
sense. And so this in programmer speak, is like some giant interface of what .NET is. And you need to implement that interface explicitly in order to be able to say, I'm .NET standard 1.0.
Correct.
So tell me about the numbering. Does 1.0, how does it differ 1.0 to 1.6? Is it... It can target more things or less things as it goes up? Tell me about that numbering.
Yes. So that's an interesting thing, because intuitively, I think it's intuitive, but clearly that's not resonating with everybody. But the idea is when you say .NET standard, you give us also a version, right? So you say, I want to do 1.0, right? Or I want to do 1.6 or 2.0 and so on and so forth. Generally speaking, when you look at this is from an API standpoint, as you're going down, you get more APIs. If you look at the number of platforms, well, as you're going up, you get more platforms. Because the idea is everybody implements a version of the standard, and as we are versioning the standard, platforms will lag behind supporting the latest version of the standard.
Right.
So reach is basically, the lower the number, the more reach you have. But API-wise, the higher the number, the more APIs you have. So generally, the advice is target the lowest version of the standard you get away with, because then you run in the most places.
I see. And so is there a chart somewhere that shows us this?
Yes.
I think I did see one, so that's kind of a loaded question.
There is a standard. There is a chart. The reason I don't draw that particular chart is because it's super confusing to people. But basically, we have a chart that looks roughly like this, where you have basically one giant table that says, here's 1.0, you know, 1.6, 2.0, right, which is the .NET standard versions. And then we have the platforms here, so platform 1, platform 2, platform 3. And they basically tell you where, basically, these, for example, let's say P1 in version 1 supports .NET Standard 1.0, and in version 1.2 supports 2.0. And that's basically based on platforms, right? Because platforms versions independently from the standard.
I see.
So Xamarin 8, let's say, may decide to say, I support, in version 8, I support 1.6, and in version 9, I support 2.0. And so this is the, this is where it gets complicated. But I mean, logically, the way I explain it to people that are more in the cross-platform world, think of .NET Standard as POSIX, and then think of the all the distros of Linux as the platforms. Right? They're all independent, but POSIX is your currency that you can use to say, if I target POSIX, I know I run every Linux, essentially. Like, I'm hand-waving, but that's close enough for analogy.
So this is an open source thing.
Yes, it
and,
is.
And they're, I mean, these kinds of decisions aren't made without controversy. If someone has a desire to see something in the base class library,
right,
or make a comment about .NET Standard, how do they voice their opinion?
Right. So the whole thing is on GitHub right now. If you want to go there and check it out, it's really proud of the URL.
And we'll put a link below as well, GitHub. Because he's not going to spell it well at all.
Exactly. So it's basically .NET. /standard.
Got it.
That's a repository that has a standard definition in it. And because it's a regular GitHub repository, you can file issues and there are discussions. And so the general thing is we are having a review board for the standard. The review board is designed not to be a Microsoft-only thing. So everybody who builds a .NET implementation, like before we acquired Xamarin, Xamarin would be part of that. They're still part of that because of their own independent implementation of it. Unity is an actual third party that is not part of Microsoft, they're part of the review board. When somebody else starts to implement .NET, they would also be welcome to join the standard. But the idea is that the review board itself is a bunch of people that implement .NET. So they have skin in the game, as I've called it out, and you know, they want to obviously build the best experience for their customers, but they also have to implement it. So we can't just add a bunch of stuff to the standard, because not everybody has to support this. So there's this tension of, you know, does it make sense and can we actually do it? A good example that we discuss right now is system.data. Databases are one of those things where they make sense in many apps, not necessarily in all the apps, but they're probably common enough that at least the common interfaces in ADO.NET probably should go into the standard. And then the specific providers, you know, Oracle, OLDB, OWC, SQL, so on.
Those would be packages.
They will be sitting on top.
Right.
And because it doesn't make sense to talk to a SQL Server on Oracle database from your phone.
Right.
But it would make sense to use a database provider that stores information on the phone. Mm-hmm. And so like SQLite would be a good, you know, lightweight database that you may actually end up using on a mobile device.
And that would be a package that you add on top of the interfaces that are in that standard.
Right.
If you decide or the group decides to put it in.
Correct.
So this is awesome. Where can people go to find out more? Is it just here?
I think this one is probably the geekiest place with all the details that you want. Generally speaking, I would recommend my blog post as a good starting point. It is meaty, as in like 15 pages printed or something, but like it has a very high level section at the top that kind of calls out what our goals were. And then as you're drilling in, there's more and more details, and you can just decide to stop reading at some point.
And if someone wants to give feedback or they want to know more, because he's willing to do more videos, where can they go to ask these kinds of questions?
Questions should actually go into the .NET standard repository as GitHub issues, and we do our best to answer them timely. And I also posted an issue a couple days ago, which is basically asking for more follow-up questions. My intent is to actually have a follow-up blog post that is basically an FAQ with all the open questions that people had.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much, my friend.
Absolutely.
It's been really enlightening. We've been learning about .NET Standard from the great Emil Landworth. My name is Seth Juarez, Channel 9. I said great.
Yes.
He's not really good at spelling.
No, I'm terrible at spelling.
Thanks so much for watching. This is Channel 9. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Bye-bye.